Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Shit Show with J-Bo. How are you? How are you? You guys doing okay? You know, every week I see that about 30 to 50 of you download this podcast. And I'm really curious who the hell would listen to this podcast. I'm happy that you do. Whoever it is. I know, like, my mom listens. Thanks, Mom. But, who else listens? Who's out there? I want to know who you are. Please hit me up on my Facebook page, The Shit Show with J-Bo. Like it on Twitter. Whatever. Just let me know, would you? Go to iTunes. Give me a 5-star review, man. Because why would you give anything else? It doesn't really help. But anyway, what does help is me knowing that some of you are listening, and I appreciate it. Last week, I told you about my very beginning, early stages of the Seattle life. I lived in Seattle for 20 years. And I'm actually going to continue that series. I'm going to do about 2 or 3. I don't know how I'm going to break them up, maybe into like 5-year increments, and try to go back and have some music for you guys from each era of my musical quote-unquote career in Seattle. And I would have done that this week. But instead, I'm going to tell you about something else. I went to Detroit, Michigan, and something you may or may not know about me is I love this country. I think it's so beautiful to drive around and to go. I mean, there's almost everything you can imagine that's in the world is right in this country. We have unbelievable mountains, unbelievable ocean, unbelievable cliffs on those oceans, like the Oregon coast. Where did Jack Kerouac hang out? The coast right above, like San Luis Obispo and Carmel and all that. Big Sur, California. I mean, have any of you ever been to Arizona? If you've never been to Arizona, it's like a different world. There's orange rock and orange sand everywhere, and it's so beautiful. Like, it's so beautiful there. And there's like these energy vortexes in this one particular town in, I forget what, it's near Flagstaff. It's about an hour from Flagstaff, not quite an hour south of Flagstaff. Arizona is gorgeous. The Grand Canyon, I believe, is partially in Arizona, or maybe that's Nevada, maybe both. I don't know. Maybe some of it's in Utah, but that whole area is unbelievable. Then you got the marshlands, and you got all the nature in Florida that stings you, bites you, or scratches you, which is what I used to always say when I was a little kid, when I would, you know, be going to the beach. And we lived 10 feet from Coastal Highway, the same, you know, A1A that Vanilla Ice talks about in his 1990 hit Ice Ice Baby, which was sampled from Queen. But they left out one bass note in the Ice Ice Baby. So the Queen song, Under Pressure, which is one of the greatest songs ever written. It's Queen and David Bowie, and it's so powerful. It goes boom, boom, doom, doo, 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 doom, 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 doom. But the Ice Ice Baby version actually goes doom, 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 doo, doo, doom, 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 doom. It has that little anticipatory note. I don't know if they added to a classic or made it better, but I think that was the first time I ever heard a Queen, maybe, when I heard Ice Ice Baby. So it's slightly ironic that Vanilla Ice turned a whole generation of people onto Queen. Anywho, I love the country, and on my birthday, my birthday falls on Day of the Dead, which was this past Saturday. Or was it Friday? No, it was Friday. No, it was Saturday. Shit, when was it? No, it was Friday. Sorry. It gets weird because I got off Thursday at work and early. I got up super early. And I don't know. Day of the Dead is really special to me. It's a Mexican holiday, and I celebrate it sometimes by painting my face with a sugar skull makeup. And I didn't do that this particular time. And I don't mind. I've been told that that's cultural appropriation, and I'm okay with that. I've never met a Mexican person that seems to be offended by that, so I'm not going to tell. I'm not going to have a bunch of white folk tell me that that's supposedly offensive. By the way, I am also trying to learn Spanish, so I think that's the ultimate cultural appropriation, right? Learning different languages. So anyway, I didn't dress up this Friday. But in the past few years, like in Seattle, I would put on rock shows and I would wear the sugar skull makeup. And it was my thing. And actually, the last time I did that was like the most depressing show of all time. Literally not a person showed up. And I was like, just fucking kind of floored, kind of depressed. And at that moment, I really should have just ended the band. It would have been dramatic, but it would have been the right thing. It went on a little bit longer, like the third, fourth incarnation of the band, Smile Brigade. That particular version was pretty badass. And I don't know if you guys knew this, but when you're in a band and you're playing, like however your drummer plays, whatever the drummer does has so much to do with your music. I mean, of course, unless they're playing from a blueprint of some other drummer, obviously you can have the same sounding band. But if you let the drummer do their own thing, they're going to flavor the music. If they're light and they're jazzy, it's going to sound like that, and it'll never be punk rock and thrashy. If they're heavy and thrashy and they listen to, say, Nirvana their entire life, it's going to have that kind of modern, really driving punk thing happening. Nothing wrong with that. But it can be a little limiting. It's exhilarating to play. It really is. I mean, that band, the final incarnation of Smile Brigade, we covered a Dead Moon song. We covered a Wipers song. We covered Some Other Guy, which was one of John Lennon's favorite songs of all time. And it sounds like Ray Charles, the name of the gentleman who wrote it, or sorry, he didn't write it. The name of the gentleman who popularized it escapes me. But anyway, Day of the Dead was Friday, and instead of playing a show and dressing up in Sugar Skull makeup, I went to a state that I had never been to before. That was my point, saying how much I love this country. I've been to 44 of the 48 lower 48 states, of course. I've never been to Alaska or Hawaii. And in the continental U.S., I've been to, let's see, well, I'm not going to name you the ones I've been to. I'll name you the ones I haven't been to. And that would be South Dakota. Never went to South Dakota. Don't believe I've been in Rhode Island. Don't believe I've been in Vermont. And I don't believe I've been in Arkansas. Aside from that, I've been in every state. And what greater way for me to spend my birthday than in a state I've never been to, and a totally legendary city that I've also never been to. You know, I told people that I was going to Detroit, and one person was excited. My girlfriend was kind of like, okay, well, it's your birthday if that's what you want to do. And I asked her to go, and she said yes, and hell yeah, we went. Most people kind of looked at me like, you're not going to like it, dude, or why? But most of those people had never been there. You know, it's ironic that the people that had actually been there. Now, I just talked to my cousin tonight, and he said it's a great city, and he's been there. And that's the difference, right? It's just misinformation. I don't know if it's a racial thing. I mean, it could be. But people are down on Detroit somehow. They say, oh, it's just, is it sad? Is it a sad place? And there probably is hella poverty there, and the murder rate is fairly high. The parts I saw, however, were really fucking cool. It's a vast, edgy northern city, and the buildings are just massive, and yeah, they look a little bit old. The first stop when we drove, got up at 5 in the morning, left by 6, got in Detroit. Well, I didn't actually hit Detroit. The day before, I had called a coffee shop just randomly, and I happened to call a coffee shop in Dearborn, Michigan. And the woman let me know that She told me a couple hot spots or cool neighborhoods, rather, in Detroit. But she said she was in Dearborn and was number one Muslim populated city in America. And we went there and it definitely felt like it. Almost every person you saw was brown skin, and English might have been their second language for sure. She was so kind. We went to her coffee shop. It was my birthday. She gave me and my girlfriend free coffee. And one thing I've learned about Muslims, now, I'm not going to go into my personal feelings about Islam, because that's a whole different thing. And to be honest, I don't know too much about it. And it's one of those things that if you're not part of it, then you probably don't know. And there's been a lot of misinformation. I mean, whatever. But she was very kind, the woman who gave me free coffee. And I had ran into a hardcore Muslim population when I was in Turkey about 3 years ago. And it was the same type of deal. There was like a figurehead. Like there was like somebody who came up to me and the person I was with, the woman I was with, and started telling us about Islam. In very glowing, very friendly, very, very interesting terms. And it was... She told us about the Islamic Center, which is the largest mosque in America, about 2 miles from from the coffee shop I was in Dearborn. And then the Henry Ford has a grounds there. He has grounds, you know, like where Ford Motors started, I guess. That has nothing to do with Islam. But she told me if I go to the mosque, and she really wanted to go with us, and she really wanted to like take us in there and show us the whole thing. And I felt like it was her job in her mind to convert anybody that wasn't part of Islam into Islam. And it didn't sound too bad. I would have gone in there, honestly, but it just didn't quite work out time-wise. But she was very kind. And Dearborn, Michigan was cool. It was fine. We ate some good food. I ordered potatoes in a sandwich because my girlfriend is vegetarian. But I think they gave us meat. I was so kind of enamored by the wonderful spices and the flat bread. And, it was Americanized a little bit. I think there was like pickles. It was just this wrapped up hot sandwich. I think there was pickles. And that reminded me, like, it's like a deli. Like that was the American influence or something. But I didn't realize to the very end that we very well may have been eating meat. And by that time, my girlfriend was almost full anyway, and I just said, don't worry about it, and I threw it away. But she may have, like, dry-heaved a few times if I had let her know that we were eating meat. I don't know. It was red. I think it was meat. They screwed it up, whatever. Anyway, we made our way into Detroit after that. Detroit proper, went to the Riverwalk, and it was just a big blur from that point on. We parked. It was kind of cold. We walked down this river walk. We could see Canada. Canada's directly across the river. We saw the GM building. There was a Comic-Con or like, I don't know, people dressed in fabulous costumes. Anime. Is it anime? What's it called? There's a word for the Japanese kind of cartoon characters or partial human, partial cartoon with big hair and onomatopoeias strapped to them. That was fairly neat. We got in something called the People Mover, and at some point on the People Mover, it dawned on me that Third Man Records is in Detroit. So first of all, I got to tell you about my opinion on Detroit's music scene. I'm a big music fan. I've dedicated a lot of my life to making music, listening to music, talking about music. And Detroit is one of the reasons I wanted to go there is because there's such a cool history with music. I was always kind of enamored by it. It just seems like everything that came out of Detroit that I heard had a tremendous work ethic and a tremendous gritty appeal. And I just picture generations of people that had to live in kind of a hard city, in a cold city, telling their kids, look, the only way you can make it out of this life is to work your fucking ass to the bone. And the musicians, and you know, I mean, I'm sure, you know, obviously there's actual workers. I mean, musicians are probably, you know, what's that Dire Straits song? Money for nothing and your chicks for free. That ain't working. That's the way you do it. You pay your guitar on the MTV. Well, that's true. I mean, a traveling musician is way easier than laying brick or working in a steel factory or cleaning the fucking streets. And it's glamorous and, you know, chicks for free and money for nothing. It's not for nothing, but, you know. But still, despite that, all that, those guys who come out of that scene seem to be really hardworking. Ted Nugent, who else? MC5, Jack White. I mean, Jack White blows me away. He's a super talented dude, youngest child of 10, from Detroit, known for fighting, beat the shit out of a guy named Jason Stollsteimer at the Magic Stick. That's a club in Detroit. And I actually got to interview Jason Stollsteimer once, and he told me he'd appreciate if I didn't bring up any, you know, sensational news like him getting beat up by Jack White. I said, okay, I won't. And I didn't. And consequently, it was a horrible interview and he was a real dick. And I really should have brought that up. I mean, it's kind of like Adam Carolla says, you know, it's kind of like if Monica Lewinsky, for instance, came on your talk show and said, I can't talk to you about Bill Clinton, but here's my handbag. You know what I mean? Anyway, where was I? Oh yeah, Jason Stollsteimer, Jack White. I went to Third Man Records. It's a record pressing plant. It's providing jobs to young, hip, attractive white kids in that area. And it was a great little area. I think it's called Midtown. And Jack White is very eccentric. And maybe the most eccentric thing about Jack White is he's not hell-bent on saving every dollar, pinching every penny. And I don't think he's a greedy guy, because the reason I say that is because if you go to one of his shops, they're color-coded down to the very, very minute detail. Like, you go into the bathroom, they had mouthwash, they had cotton balls, they had sanitary napkins for the ladies, they had, I walked in there with my girlfriend, they had cream for your face, they had makeup, every tile was yellow or black. It was just perfect, perfectly manicured everything. They even had an amplifier, a Fender Twin Reverb, and it gave me hope that I'm going to keep my Fender Twin Reverb because that's what Jack White uses. It was Jack White's amp from the Grammys. They had it there. They just had it out. I remember thinking, can I play this? And there was a guitar, and you were supposed to play it with a little pedal called the Bumblebee. And it kind of made you sound like a really shitty version of Jack White's leads when you kicked it on. But it was really loud and really obnoxious. But they had a little guitar, and they just let you play it. There was nothing around it. It was really hands-on and very cool. So I had a great time at Third Man Records. I've also been to the Third Man Records in Nashville, which is a little smaller, but a little... The shop is a little more crafted, like a little more kitschy or something and cool. But Jack White, you know, I got to see him when I was, I don't fucking know, how old was I? I must have been 26. And it was the White Stripes. And they were playing the Capitol Theater in Olympia, Washington. And I had literally heard one song by them. And I believe that song, well, it was off Red Blood Cells, and I liked it. But, you know, I find, you know, that I was just drawn to go see that show. And it kind of, I don't know, when there's a force in the world, it almost seems like you hear these stories. Friends of mine, like how they discovered Nirvana, they just walked into a shop and liked the cover of the record and got it. It was Nirvana. I almost feel that there are forces in this world that kind of impact. And those are just two rock and roll examples, and it's different in everybody's life, but it's like if they impact culture, you're gonna just stumble upon them, and people en masse will stumble upon them. Do you guys understand what I'm saying? I had no reason, I don't remember liking the White Stripes, but I went down to Olympia and they came out with a 40-foot American flag behind them, and Jack and Meg White proceeded to drop my fucking jaw open, and I remember standing there slack-jawed and thinking, this is the greatest fucking thing I've ever seen. I mean, really. And it's so noteworthy. because only those two people could have done it. A lot of bands, you can kind of interchange. You can bring a drummer in. You can bring another bass player. It'll kind of sound the same. But the reason why the White Stripes were great was because of Meg White, as odd as that sounds. She was the interesting factor in that band because, first of all, she was female. Jack White works very well with females, I've learned. She couldn't play drums, you know, like a standard drummer does, really. But honestly, like rock and roll, that's the great thing. I think it takes kind of odd combinations sometimes. Like, humans are rewarded, in a sense, for trying different things, for not getting the most obvious, you know. It's also a punk rock thing. The person who's least suited for the job is the one that should have that job. But the White Stripes made up something very special that Jack White has never, ever been able to match with, you know, 10 amazing genius musicians. You know what I mean? There was just some crazy little combination that happened there. And I was really impressed and stoked and lucky to have seen it back then and when I was 26. And, you know, from that moment, I've always followed his career through the Rackin' Tours and the Dead Weather. I wasn't crazy about those bands because they were just bands, right? They were good, but they were just bands. The White Stripes was, like, special, you know what I mean, in my opinion. Anyway, in the same way, like, Nirvana was special, you know? Kind of amateurish, but so fucking awesome because of that, you know? Anyhow, I went to Third Man Records, and then I had some wonderful, like super vegan grub right next door, and, you know, I had this little shot of some kind of elixir that just made me feel so good, and it was, like, vinegar in there, and turmeric and garlic and whatever, just very good, and a little bit of juice in there. So then we walked across Detroit, and everybody's like, no, you don't want to walk that far. But I did want to walk that far. I love walking through a city. It's the only way to know how a city is, how you like it. We walked past Dodgers Stadium. Tiger Stadium. Beautiful stadium with these kind of like concrete tigers hanging all over the thing. We walked by the Fox Theater, and I'd always heard of the Fox Theater. And it dawned on me, like, it was like an intimidating looking theater. It was right on one of the main strips in Detroit. And I was just like, can you imagine rolling into this city, seeing that sign, and knowing it's going to be a whole bunch of people in there and actually going in there to play? It just seems so, like, it was such an old, beautiful, stone, kind of stoic feeling, this Fox Theater. It was beautiful, and I was just imagining what it'd be like to come into town and play that thing. And if it came off as intimidating to me, that's never really happened. I've never looked at a venue before and been like, wow. And I don't know why it happened here. But Detroit was huge. It's massive. It looks like Chicago to me. I mean, it has that feeling, big windy city, big northern windy city, just massive, you know, old school. It's been around a long time. And I don't know. What else? We found a hostel, a little hostel, and it was called Hostel Detroit, and it was this guy. I think his name was maybe Evan or something. It probably wasn't, but I believe that he owned the place, and it was such a cool idea because hostels, he basically, he was the only hostel in town. I'm sure it's probably sold out most nights. Everybody's paying. If it's not sold out, it's like 3/4 sold out most nights, I would guess, at least when it's not dead of winter, you know. Actually, it's probably only sold out in the summertime, but it looked like he just got this building, and he is probably handy, which I appreciate so much. And he converted this building, got some really nice electronic locks, and made it safe in an okay neighborhood in Detroit, and he made it into a hostel. I think he's making hella money. I think that'd be a great business to get into. I mean, how cool would that be to have a hostel? I mean, any business would be great if you created it yourself and you did well. I guess the question is, when I think about things like that, it's like, I don't know that I would want to be owner of a business that that you'd have to be there all the time and be like the landlord, because at some point it would own you. It'd be great to maybe start something, I don't know, ideally online, and, you know, like a podcast, and get you know, be able to be in fucking Paris or Italy or South America or Detroit and at a hotel and do your little podcast, be wherever you wanted and put it out into the world, or, you know, run a website that makes money or whatever it is. But that seems fucking dope to me, like doing the internet deal and being able to travel around. But who knows? I'm sure people that do that get sick of it. The grass is always greener, right? And they probably just want a stable home. But, went to the hostel. What else? Oh, we went out. Did we go out that night? I guess night of my birthday. Where did we go? I fucking went to Mexican Town. Mexican Town is exactly what you would think. It's just a part of town with a bunch of Mexican restaurants and some pizzerias and some pretty hard looking motherfuckers walking around. I went to this little hamburger joint called Tailway, and I love diners. I love that Americana. I love that feel. I don't know. I think myself and people my age were enamored by that because of the movie Back to the Future. Back to the Future just made me like hungry for wanting to see the past and the 50s, and it just, that whole, you know, diner and fucking slicked back hair and, you know, Michael J. Fox as Marty and all that, and Biff and all that shit. It just was so cool. And I think about, you know, it really tells a lot about your personality. If you ask somebody, would you rather go 100 years into the future or 100 years into the past? 100 years into the future is a bold fucking move because you have no idea. But that's probably, it's like getting red-pilled, right? That's like knowing the truth and being really bold about things. Going to the past seems very safe, but how many of you would do that? Just like how many of you would, like, you know, if you're 80 years old, just dissolve into a virtual reality machine and never want to come back? I've been thinking about it lately, and it doesn't seem like that bad of an idea. I mean, get drugged up, put on some goggles and earphones and just drift off and be part of some wonderful fucking world where you can literally, you know, bound about and have romance and laugh and be carefree once again. Cause I'll tell you, man, getting old's a bitch. Oh man. I don't feel like I'm old, but I've seen it. I've seen it up close, and it's like old people, they're literally the toughest folks you'll ever meet. I mean, it was, man, I won't get into all that personal history happening right now, but tough motherfuckers, man. Old people are tough as shit. That's why they say go fuck it. That's why they're just belligerent, you know, and they'll say anything, a lot of them, because they've seen it all, and what are you going to do? They're fucking miserable because it sucks. We're living too long these days. Not that I would change it, you know, because that's horrible, obviously. Yeah, I went to get this hamburger at Tailway, and it was a place that had been there since like 1928. It was one of the first, what's that tiny little white cat? You have one of the first White Castles, and then in 1944 it turned into Tailway, and it was just beautiful, man. It was just like tiny, and the prices were very, very cheap. You know, a hamburger was like, you said single, double, and you could get something to go, like four hamburgers for like $2.80 or something. And I just sat there, and the waitress looked like she had been there for about 40 years and had a crazy-ass haircut. But she was super witty and just, like, perfect at her job. And I ate two cheeseburgers and fries and a Coke, and it was, I could have been sitting there in 1944. It felt good, like I was, you know, Marty fucking McFly in Back to the Future. And it was, like, $6. You know, back then it would have been, you know, 60 cents, but whatever. It was excellent. It was my birthday dinner. I sat there by myself, and my girlfriend was at CVS pharmacy, like trying on makeup or something. You know, I also find that that's a really cool thing to do. Couples don't need to be joined at the hip when they go places. Like, I had a friend who told me something one time. He said when him and his girlfriend go to a city for the first time, what they do is immediately go separate directions for like half a day. And I thought that was really fucking brilliant. I don't know. I enjoyed that. And she went to CVS Pharmacy, and I went to Tailway Hamburgers. Both had a nice time. Why make one suffer, right? Just for looks, just for optics, man. Fuck the optics. Anyway, went back to the hostel after that. Went to sleep. I know I'm fucking boring, but you know what? I'm good in the morning. I might be boring, but I'm good in the morning, as in I'm getting up and I'm going to get coffee and I'm going to do things and I'm not dragging ass and feeling shitty. So that's what I did. Went to bed. Next morning, got coffee. Place called Astro. Astro had nothing to do with the White Stripes song Astro. And I was going to leave at 2 o'clock. It was about 4 or 5 hours back to where I was coming. I dropped my girlfriend off at the Goodwill. She loves Goodwill. Like, she's all about it. It's like one of her favorite things to go to a Goodwill. And just, she can spend all day in them. She just fills up her cart, whether she has money or not. And then might buy a few things, but then puts them all back. It's actually pretty funny. It's pretty endearing. I actually heard Goodwill. She just loves it. Loves it, loves it, loves it. But I mean, I understand it, Goodwill. It makes anybody feel like, you know, dollar millionaire, like the dollar menu at McDonald's. You know, you have $10 and you're rich. Well, Goodwill, if you have, you know, 20, you know, pop some tags, you're good to go, right? Right, Macklemore? So I dropped her off there in last moment. This was fucking awesome. This is the greatest part of the trip, in my opinion. I said, Motown Museum. Motown is from Detroit. I think I heard they do tours. So I was like, Rachel, I'll be back in 1 hour. We got to be ready to go, but I'm going to the Motown Museum. So I drove across town and I did see some of those burnout buildings. Previously nice house, obviously, but just shells of houses, just burnt out or somehow they were just gutted. And it was very strange, and that's what I'd always heard about Detroit, that it was just a terrible place, you know, it was just recovering, and it was really sad. I didn't see a lot of that, but I saw a little bit on the way to Motown, and I rolled up to Hitsville, USA. Now, I know you guys think about Motown like big fucking deal, right? But if you really think about it, Motown was, you know, we think about musical scenes. We think about Athens, Georgia. We think about Seattle. We think about Austin, LA, New York, obviously. But I don't know that there was ever a musical movement that had more humble beginnings than Motown, that did better than Motown. I really don't, and it was so mind-blowing to me. I rolled up, and it just, there was this big sign, so it says, Hitsville, USA, and it was so cool. It was a regular house, and I got in. I was late, but they let me in, and long story short, this house had been converted into a studio. The garage had been converted into a studio, and Berry Gordy started it with Smokey Robinson in like 1959. And within a few years, I don't know, 10 years, I don't know how long, Berry Gordy had made roughly $20 million. And I don't know exactly the time frame. It might have been through the whole 60s. But $20 million back in the 60s was probably like, I don't know, $250 million now, maybe $500 million. All on just homegrown talent. Well, not homegrown, I guess. I'm sure they did some recruiting, but they found the session musicians at the very least, like the Funk Crew, I believe they were called, or the Funk Brothers. That was the group in Motown, and it was a little tiny room, no bigger than the living room that you probably have at your house. But literally, there could be 50 of these songs, and we would all know most of the words to them, you know. I could sit here, you know, we're talking Diana Ross and the Supremes. We're talking Michael Jackson as a young boy with the Jackson 5. We're talking Smokey Robinson. All in this house. Well, actually, I heard it was kind of spread out through Detroit, but it all started here, you know? And it was Studio A. It was the very famous studio. Who else? Stevie Wonder as a young child. Just all these massive legends came through this place. And it was just so inspiring to hear about Berry Gordy, and he had this vision. He borrowed $800 and made $20 million, you know, in the first X amount of years. And I love that. I love that can-do attitude. I love something that's not necessarily sexy when you start it off, but it's sexy when it finishes. You know what I mean? I mean, Motown is sexy as fuck. But when he started, he was just a dude who didn't have a better idea. He had an entrepreneurial spirit, and he wanted to start some shit up. And you did it, man. You know, I don't know, man. I love that attitude in life. I was watching something yesterday. It was Gene Simmons from Kiss just talking about when they started. And they always just wanted to be the band that they never were. And he just said the way he just, or they, I'm sorry, the band that they never had seen live. They wanted to be that band. And he said, to hell with what anybody thinks. Just go, you know, true north, put your nose to the wind and just go for it. And I love that, man. And not, obviously not everybody is going to succeed like those people, but the spirit, the pioneer spirit is so beautiful to me. So, so beautiful. And, Motown, Berry Gordy, Smokey Robinson, and Smokey Robinson, by the way, one of the most beautiful human beings that's ever existed, as far as I can tell. Very good looking dude, but aside from that, like, unbelievable voice and unbelievable energy. And I got to see him about 2 months ago in Greensburg. And I'm going to tell you, it was one of the probably top 20 shows I've ever seen. And he only played about maybe 10 songs over the course of an hour and a half. He just answered questions. You know, he's about 80 years old, 79. But he looked good, and he sang better than anybody I've ever seen sing. You know, he sang so, so, so well. And so that was amazing. The Motown Museum, Motown music. I mean, it's not that I sit around and listen to Motown all fucking day, right? Really. But I'm aware of what that means, the history, the trajectory, like how rare that really is, you know? It's pretty much like the British invasion, but it's from just Detroit, you know? There was more hits that came out of that house in that town than all of Britain during the British invasion, you know what I mean? It's really amazing. So that was killer, and I left there and fucking got in the car, got some burritos, and started back to Greensburg, Pennsylvania, man. And it was a great drive. It was a great birthday. And I want to thank all of you for listening to the Shit Show with J-Bo about my birthday on Day of the Dead in Detroit. And I think next week we're going to talk about the midterms with Dirty Dave. It's political, you know, but he did predict that the blue wave would not happen. And I've got a great slogan for tomorrow. The slogan is, free speech is bad for America. Blue Tsunami 2018. All right, send it. We'll talk to you guys soon. Look for us next Tuesday. Love you all. Go show me some love somewhere on fucking social media. All right, this is J-Bo. Take care. We'll talk soon. Bye.